Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
From the number one sports site in the world.
Big names.
Bold interviews.
Beyond the X's and O's.
Welcome to the fastest 2 hours in radio.
On Yahoo Sports Radio.
And yahoosportsradio.com.
This is the Big E Sports Show.
With the one and only, the triple threat, the Big E.
Alyssa Walker-Campbell. The 6 foot former Sooner women's basketball player.
She can post, pin,
turn the volume up,
and produce with some of today and yesterday's biggest stars.
Alyssa Walker-Campbell delivers sports the way you want it. Get ready to go beyond the X's and O's
with today's star athletes, coaches, and sports figures.
This is the Big E Sports Show
right now.
Now from the Quicken Loans studios of Yahoo Sports Radio.
Are you ready?
Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze.
Here she is, the one and only, the Big E, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Everyone, welcome you back to hour number two, as it is time for a history lesson at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. And this week, our good friends at Triumph Books have arranged a wonderful interview with Todd Anton. He is the co-author of his new book, When Football Went to War. The foreword was written by one of my favorites. He's been on our show in the past, Marv Levy. Good evening, Todd. It's great to have you with us tonight.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, congratulations on the book. And I know the football season, it's already concluded, but we still wanted to make a point to have you on our program and share some of those unforgettable stories of Pro Football Hall of Famers, NFL owners, and some of the gentlemen that have served our great country and just pay tribute to their perseverance and how they have bravely served. Is this a project that you'd wanted to do for quite some time?
It is. I mean, I wrote the book when baseball went to war earlier. I mean, I kept running into these fantastic football stories. I feel Bill O'Reilly's killed Lincoln and Kennedy and Jesus. I figure I can send every sport to war. So in coming across these stories, you know, we tend to think of our athletes as in one-dimensional, as athletes, but we forget that they were veterans, too, and they went through quite a bit. And when we see them as our soldiers, as our veterans, you really get a deeper appreciation for them, and we're so special to have had them as long as we've had.
You know, and I was going to ask you, Todd, how many players did you profile throughout the book from the collegiate and from the professional level?
That's a good question. I'm trying to, it all runs together, but it's well over 125 players from three college Hall of Famers that served on the USS Maine that were killed in Havana Harbor all the way up to Pat Tillman. I mean, we've covered quite a span of sacrifice. Sacrifice knows no generation. It just keeps asking more and more every time.
Okay, the title of the book is When Football Went to War. So kind of break it down. Give us a kind of a synopsis of how you did break all this down. Obviously, so much history and the men that you wanted to profile.
Well, the men we wanted to profile is in regards, I mean, there was everybody who served, but there's some who paid the ultimate price. And there was obviously more of a focus on the World War II generation, since that made the highest demand. And so we broke it down by seasons, from 41 all the way to, you know, all the way to 45, and then we did Korea, and then we did Vietnam, and then and so on. But we broke it down, not just what they did, but how they felt about it, and we went with compelling stories. If somebody just pumped gas at an airbase, I mean, that's service. I get that. But, you know, there are people like Chuck Bednarik, Joe Foss, Tom Landry, Bud Grant, Jack Loomis, that go on, that help us personalize these stories. And Pete Rozelle, for goodness sake, she was in the war,
yeah,
too.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, we wanted to bring the humanity to it, because football served more than any other sport. 3 Medal of Honor recipients, 22 KIAs in World War II. that is something that demands to be told. So we focused a lot on the KIA story since they paid the ultimate price.
Well, I want to learn some more about some of the Hall of Famers that served in World War II. You just rattled off some of the names. Bud Grant, 18 years as the head coach of the Minnesota Vikings. What were some stories that you shared about his contributions?
Well, you know, Bud Grant, you know, he was an All-America everything out of high school in 1945, wet behind the ears, 18, 19-year-old kid. And, you know, in 1945, the war ended in August of 45. You know, he graduated most likely in May is when he graduated, May, June. So he didn't have too much of the war really to impact him. But nonetheless, you had to go into service, and he did. And so he went into the service as, you know, most people 18, 19 years old think they know everything anyway. And he went into the Navy, and the Navy sent him to, and most athletes, they sent him to what they call the Great Lakes Naval Station in Chicago. That's where they sent famous pitcher Bob Feller back in 1941. And most of the athletes went through there. And anyway, he went there, and they put him on the football team there. And, you know, he thought he knew everything, and he ran into Paul Brown, who was the head coach. And, you know, the Marine Corps is known for its drill instructors, and so is the Army. But the Navy, not so much. Well, Paul Brown took Bud Grant and turned him into one, and turned him in from an ill-disciplined, snot-nosed teenager into a football machine.
Yes.
And made him a part of the Blue Jackets that went out and even beat Notre Dame 39-7 with a bunch of teenage kids. And they beat Notre Dame. And Bud Grant credits his coaching career to Paul Brown because he taught him the discipline, and he came to appreciate that discipline and organization and management. And then as he got that, I mean, he went on and became an All-America at Minnesota. And then a lot of people don't know about Bud Grant is he gave up a contract in the NFL to go play in the National Basketball Association for the Minneapolis Lakers.
I think that's an amazing story. He won an NBA title in his first year.
Sure did. He played with George Mikan and the Lakers and all of that. And a lot of people don't know that. He was a two-year baseball star at Minnesota. He played basketball and football at Minnesota. I mean, he is the ultimate athlete. And a lot of people don't realize that. You hear two sports people, but he was Bo Jackson before Bo Jackson, right?
Quite
a talent, quite an amazing talent, and quite an amazing man and amazing coach. And he went from being 18, 19 years old to wanting to passionately lead men on the sidelines. And of course, you know, he played for the Eagles. He played with Chuck Mednarik, Concrete Charlie, and you know, who's another World War II legend. And so Bud Grant is one of a kind, and we can learn a lot from him.
Well, he certainly is one of the all-time greatest coaches. As I understand, I talked to Joe Capp just about a week ago, and he's going to be on the show coming up. But I did not realize that Bud Grant, that he was a first-round draft pick for the Philadelphia Eagles in 1956 and postponed, as you had just said, his NFL debut to play for the Minneapolis Lakers. So let's get some hits on Tom Landry, the legendary Dallas Cowboys coach, appeared in a record 5 Super Bowls, winning 2 championships. What did you share in the book about him?
Well, Tom Landry is, you know, I'll keep it brief because I know our time is limited, but Tom Landry is the quintessential definition of what we're looking for. What he said, he didn't go for the showboating into the end zone or anything. He said, act like you've been there before. Score your touchdown and get out of there. Just act like you've been there before. And Tom Landry, his brother served in World War II and was killed as a B-17 bomber pilot over Europe, and he lost his brother. Mm. And Tom, in 42, Landry went into flight school and became a B-17 pilot and flew missions over Germany, crash-landed his plane once. His crew was going to bail out over Belgium until he realized he had to change the mixture of his fuel so he could save his crew and his plane and bring it back to England. And he was a remarkable man. He was a heroic man. And he said he didn't do anything. And he did. When you ask him about it personally, he would say, well, I'm just one of 16 million people who served in the war. I'm nobody different. But as he got older, you know, he said, you know, after you've been out in war as long as he flew over 35 missions. And he said he was young and he'd never been out of his hometown, and now here he was over Germany, and he was just lucky to survive. And he came back as a military veteran. I mean, he played for the New York Yankees football team. A lot of people don't realize the New York Yankees were a football team. The Brooklyn Dodgers were a football team. He played for the Giants. He played for the Cowboys. But as a player, he was phenomenal. But as a coach, he was a legend. And that partnership that he had as a veteran, that he had with Roger Staubach, was really deep because Roger Staubach is a Naval Academy veteran and also a veteran of the Vietnam War. And the two of them, I had a mutual understanding. When I talked to Roger Staubach about it, Roger Staubach said, there was something between us that didn't need to be explained, and that was what we learned in the service.
Todd, we're up against the clock. We got to go to break at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. The title of the book is When Football Went to War, and it truly is the perfect tribute to the American athletes turned soldiers, and it's so inspiring. And I know you guys are going to enjoy that. Go out and get a copy of that. Again, thanks so much, Todd.
Thank you very much. Have a great one.
Much more straight ahead in hour number two at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We will be right back.
Big games, bold interviews, beyond the X's and O's.
You're listening to the fastest 2 hours in radio.
It's the Big E Sports Show on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Okay, we are back with you in hour number two of the Big E Sports Show. And as promised, it is time to turn our attention to the Big Ten Conference. And we want to get a quick hit and recap National Signing Day for the University of Nebraska. And also, we want to get our next guest, get his thoughts on Oklahoma State Marcus Smart's incident for shoving that Texas Tech fan. We want him to weigh in on that. And I'm very confident that former NFL and Husker standout Jason Peter can certainly provide that helping hand and decipher the altercation. Happy Valentine's Day. I'm so sorry. In many ways, I need to apologize for interrupting you and Sarah's special evening tonight on Valentine's.
Oh, you're not interrupting anything. I am not a big Valentine's Day guy. I put in all the love 364 other days of the year.
Well, you're a great guy and always a wonderful guest, and we want to get your perspective on Marcus Smart, because I tell you what, Jason, this has truly been one of the hottest topics all week long. And, you know, as a former NFL player and you played on the collegiate level, you've played in front of many hostile crowds and stadiums. I mean, what was your take or your reaction? And this guy's got to be able to handle his frustration and handle those emotions.
Yeah, I have mixed feelings, because on one side, you're thinking, you know, these people, and it's the day and age of the internet where nobody takes responsibility for anything that they do or that they say. And here you had a situation where Texas Tech's number one fan said something, and, you know, from everything that we've heard, it was pretty bad, to the point where I guess this guy, you know, he had shared some text messages with, I think it was a colleague or a friend of Doug Gottlieb, and it wasn't good. And part of me is like, you know what? I'm glad Marcus Smart did that. In fact, you know what? I wish he would have hit him, because there just is no accountability for anybody anymore. And usually it's the younger generation. But this was a grown man out there who was doing this. So there are feelings kind of, you know, in favor of what he did. But then it's also, you know, I'm the former athlete, where you just know that's part of going on the road. You've got to be mentally tough. And obviously basketball is a little bit different, because you know, people are sitting on the floor, you know, for the most part. And in football, there's a little bit more of a breathing room, although some stadiums are pretty tight. But you just have to have discipline, and you've got to expect that. So, you know, if you're playing on the road and you go into the crowd, there's a good chance somebody is going to say something to irritate you. And that's no different than if you're out on the court and some guys are talking trash and whispering stuff in your ear and trying to get under your skin. And obviously they did that with Marcus Smart.
Well, you know, Marcus Smart is only 19 years old. It's so tough. And as you're alluding to, you know, these fans, they provoke you, and the obscenities that are being shouted. And these are 50-year-old men, you know, that are just getting absolutely carried away.
Yeah, and, you know, that's nothing new either. When we, the one school that we played that had a stadium built where the fans were right on you, was out in Boulder at the University of Colorado. I mean, it was, you had your bench, and right behind you was the first row. There was a railing, and there was maybe a 2-foot walkway, and then that first fan, or that first row of fans was sitting there. And at the time, they served alcohol. I'm not sure if they still serve alcohol, but they served alcohol. I mean, you could stand in the middle of the field. We'd be in the huddle, and all of a sudden, you'd just get a whiff of Coors Light going across your face because they had so much beer in that stadium. And obviously, people drinking, it lowers people's judgment, and before you know it, I mean, they're just dropping F-bombs, this and that, and there wasn't a game that we went out there where people were not trying to get under your skin, and you look up there, and sometimes you expect to see, you know, a high school kid or college kid or somebody just fresh out of college in their 20s, but no. You know, the guy who's telling you that you're the scum of the earth and you might as well just go jump off a bridge for the most part. He's 50 years old and he has his 11-year-old son sitting next to him, and you're thinking to yourself, wow. I mean, really? You know, what kind of example is that? And yeah. I'm all for the talking trash here and there, but I mean, some of this stuff certainly crosses the line, and I think that's probably what happened with the Marcus Smart case. I don't think this was just some guy yelling, "Hey, you know, your game is garbage, Smart," or something like that. This was probably, I guess, some people would say below the belt.
Well, you know, Jason, I'm not sure if you've ever been into Stillwater, Oklahoma, but Gallagher-Iber Arena, yeah, that's one of the most hostile environments to play in. I mean, you feel like those fans are right there on the floor, and they're in your face, and they are shouting all kinds of things. So you have to wonder, too, you know, for head coach Travis Ford, Oklahoma State's head coach, he's got to do a better job of just kind of reining in Marcus and helping him deal with his frustration. I mean, this kid is a tremendous player. He's just got to be able to manage that fan negativity and the profanity, too.
Yeah, and that's part of being an athlete, being a basketball player, football player, you name it. Anywhere where they have environments and arenas and stadiums where they're putting, you know, 15,000 in basketball arenas and up to over 100,000 now in football stadiums, you have to know that this stuff is coming. And as a coach, you need to prepare your players for that. Now, I don't know exactly what was said, but whatever it may be, there's no excuse for you ultimately to lay a hand on a fan, no matter what he said, because ultimately you're going to end up cheating your teammates. And Marcus Smart, like you said, I mean, he's one of the premier basketball players in college right now, and his team, they need him, and guys are counting on him. And when you kind of put your guard down for just a minute or two, and do something dumb like that, ultimately you're costing everybody else.
Well, Marcus Smart certainly apologized for his action. This is a tough lesson to learn. And, Jason, we're quickly running out of time, but just quickly give us an overall assessment of how you think Nebraska did as we transition, how they did with national recruiting.
From the rankings, Nebraska really didn't have a great year. I think they were anywhere between 35 and 40. There just doesn't seem to be a lot of momentum. Obviously, coming out of the last season with the whole Pelini debacle and everything else, they got one kid that looks like he could be something, Tanner Farmer, an offensive lineman, kind of built, you know, from the same cloth as some of those 90s offensive linemen. But we'll just have to wait and see. You always need about 2-3 years before you can really judge class.
Well, and over the next couple of weeks, I want to talk some more about, as far as the QB position, Zach Darlington is headed into Lincoln, and I want to get your take on that. But, Jay, we're out of time. Happy Valentine's Day. Enjoy the weekend. And we'll catch up with you next weekend right here at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Thanks so much, Jay.
Thanks for having me.
Much more straight ahead at YSR.
Interviews beyond the X's and O's.
You're listening to the fastest 2 hours in radio.
It's the Big E Sports Show on Yahoo Sports Radio.
And we we want to welcome you back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big East Sports Show. And of course, if you did not know, our home base is right here in Houston, Texas, and it is truly one of the most dynamic and vibrant cities I think that my family and I have had an opportunity to live in. And if there's one thing I've learned over the past 6 months since we've made this big move, is that Houston is home of some of the best sports fans in all the country, and it is one of the big reasons why Houston continues to host major sporting events. There are several on the horizon, and we're looking forward to talking about it this evening at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big East Sports Show. That's why we have extended an invitation tonight to Janice Burke. She is the CEO of the Houston Sports Authority, who plays an integral role with securing these sporting events. Good evening, Janice. It's great to have you with us.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure.
Well, we've got a lot of ground to cover, and I'm going to lead off our conversation by just kind of talking about and sharing with our listeners across the country just this strong reputation that Houston has. And they are accustomed to hosting major sporting events. They've already hosted 2 Super Bowls. They've got another one coming up in 2017, 12 NBA Finals. It is an exciting time for the city of Houston.
It really is, and I think that we who live here, we know that. You know, we see it every day. But it's fun in my job that I get to go out and kind of tout to the rest of the world and to the rest of the country why Houston is the best sports city around, and try to bid for these events and bring them. There's a lot of competition, especially with the big mega marquee events. But we continue to win them over and over again, and it's the fans, we have a great volunteer base, and we have these fantastic facilities.
Janice, kind of give us a summary of some of the upcoming events, because I know that Houston is looking to host multiple NCAA championships. Kind of break that down for us.
Yeah, so NCAA did something different this year than they've done in years past, and they went out to bid 84 national championships. And we won some of those. We have a Division I men's Final Four coming. Of course, most of the community knows about that. Mm-hmm. But on top of that, we made it to the finals for a women's Final Four. We have a Division I men's soccer college cup coming, which would take place at BBVA Compass Stadium. And then we have Division III women's golf championships in 16 and 17, and Division II women's golf championships in 18 that we won through that process.
Janice Burke is joining us this week in a Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We are zeroing in on the city of Houston. She is the CEO of the Houston Sports Authority right here in Harris County. And obviously, I'm very excited to learn about Houston potentially being a finalist for the 2017 for the Women's Final Four. When will that be determined?
Well, there's a group of us that the bid committee will be going to the Women's Final Four in Nashville. We will tour their facilities, kind of get a behind-the-scenes look at exactly what it takes to put this on. Of course, it's similar to the men's, so we have an idea, but it'll give us a chance to walk around. And then the final bid is due on May 2nd by 5 p.m. All bid cities, there's 7 of us in the finals here.
Uh-huh.
And then there will be some in-person meetings. They'll come to Houston. They'll tour. We'll have a few phone conversations throughout the summer. And then we will go for one last final in-person presentation in November.
Well, it's an extensive process. So when the committee is looking at, you know, prospective hosts, what are those keys that they're specifically looking forward to?
Well, I think, you know, the facility and the footprint around the facility, because a lot of these events have grown. So they're not just the event itself. You know, you have a fan fest area, or you have, in this case with Women's Final Four, there is a women's convention attached to it, so that would be at the George R. Brown. We have that whole Discovery Green Park area that we use so well now here in Houston. And so, and with the other anchor hotel, the Convention Center Hotel on the other side of the Convention Center, similar to the Hilton Americas, we're just going to have this really great kind of dynamic circle encompassed area for fans and people to be a part of it, even if they don't have a ticket to the event itself.
Well, and you got to love, too, getting the kind of support from Texas A&M head women's basketball coach Gary Blair.
Yes, and, you know, we have a great relationship with Rice and U of H and all of our universities and colleges here in this area, and so they'll be around the table. But we thought what a strength it is to bring in Texas A&M with their experience, and they've also hosted hosted a lot of national championships on campus. So it's been a really good team.
Janice Burke joining us this evening at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big East Sports Show. She is the CEO of the Houston Sports Authority. And I think it's important for all the folks, even here in Houston, how they can participate. And I know you're always looking for volunteers. Reach out to our audience tonight and tell them where they can go online, check out some of the things that are happening, these upcoming events, and where they can find more information.
Yeah, so if you go to HoustonSports.org, we have a volunteer area, we have so many events that interest just a whole variety of people. So from the Transplant Games of America that's coming this summer, mm-hmm. that's one that our medical community is very involved with, and it's a very emotional event. Those that have lost loved ones come and cheer on those that are recipients of those donor organs. The Grand Prix coming up this summer. We've got SWAC basketball and SWAC football in the fall. There's just a wide variety, and depending what sport you love, we welcome anyone to join us.
You know, I said in the open, Janice, that Houston has such a strong reputation for hosting major sporting events, and they've already hosted two Super Bowls, and on the horizon, of course, is Super Bowl in 2017. What kind of role will the Houston Sports Authority have in preparing for that?
Well, we were on the bid committee, but it's a big community effort. So the Convention and Visitors Bureau, we had folks from Houston First that run our convention center and the theater district facilities, and the city was involved, the county was involved. That is a mega, mega bid to put together, and Rick Campo is leading those efforts, and, Houston is going to blow them away once again like we did when we hosted last time.
Well, and I was going to ask you too, Janice, you know, what kind of economic impact does this have? I mean, what are the projections in terms of for Houston?
Oh gosh, it's in the millions. I mean, if you look at just the economic impact from the NBA All-Star game that we hosted last year, it was $50 million.
Wow.
And, you know, you times it by, 10 with a Super Bowl.
We are so glad you've been joining us this weekend at Yahoo Sports Radio at the Big East Sports Show. Janice Burke, the CEO of the Houston Sports Authority, has been joining us. And once again, tell all of our listeners where they can go and find out more information.
If you go to our website, HoustonSports.org, you can learn about all the different events we're bidding on or that we have coming that are already awarded. And you can volunteer. We'd love to have anyone who has an interest.
Janice, we sincerely appreciate you dropping by tonight, and we look forward to catching up with you real soon, okay?
Okay, thanks so much.
Much more straight ahead this weekend at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big East Sports Show. We will be right back with much, much more. Elissa Walker-Campbell back with you at YSR, the Quicken Loan Studios. And in our final segment tonight, we are going to go around the horn. We're going to get you ready for the 2014 Major League Baseball season as spring training is officially underway for a number of teams. And we have invited in tonight our very own at Yahoo Sports Radio, our producer, Andy Pondillo, who is always my go-to guy whenever I have a baseball question. He is big league, and it's his first time on the show. We want to welcome you in, Andy. It's great to have you with us this evening.
Well, why, thank you. It's about time to put the mastermind of this program on there.
That's so true. We certainly saved the best for last. And, you know, Andy, we've got a number of topics that I want to hit on and pick your brain, but the wait is over. I know you're very anxious about the upcoming season, but so much news this past week about Derek Jeter, his announcement that he will retire after the 2014 season. What was your reaction when you heard the news?
I think it's a good time for Jeter to retire. He's facing a lot of injury issues, barely got any at-bats last year. So it's a good time for him to go out. His defensive skills have been declining in recent years, and he still has a pretty good bat, but a lot of his other intangibles when he played have left him the speed, the arm strength, and a lot of his power. So I think he could still be a productive hitter for maybe 3 or 4 more years, but Derek Jeter is more than just a hitter. He's the captain of the Yankees. He's a four-tool player, can do just about anything on the field. So for him to retire now, I think it's perfect timing, and for him to go out on his own words is the Derek Jeter way. I don't think he would have had it any other way.
You know, and Andy, to recap for all of our listeners too, he had a myriad of leg and ankle injuries last year, and so I guess I was not that surprised by his decision. He's going to be 40 years of age in the month of June.
Yeah, definitely, and it's 20 seasons after this year, so if he was a DH or a first baseman or a guy that really didn't have to use his mobility as much, I think he could go on a little longer with the injury that he has, but it's just time. You know, Jeter has everything he needs, 5 World Series championships. He's going to go down as one of the greatest Yankee players ever. Name's going to be right next to Lou Gehrig, Babe Ruth, all of the greats. He's going to be enshrined in that little area they have out in left center field. So it's not going to be long before there's a Derek Jeter plaque out there. And what more can you say about the guy? Just a true Yankee. and 3,000 hits, a first ballot Hall of Famer, without question.
Our very own Andy Pondillo, our producer at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, is breaking it all down for us right here this evening, the 2014 Major League Baseball season. It is just around the corner. So, you know, you were talking about Derek Jeter in terms of him being the centerpiece for the Yankees. What do you think, as far as intangibles, what distinguished him as a player?
I think his loyalty to the Yankees. He definitely could have went to another team at any point in his career. The Yankees stayed loyal to him. He stayed loyal to the Yankees, but he was also good to the fans. He was very accessible. You would always see him interacting with different charities, with different fans on the field, and he led by example. He came through clutch. It seemed like every single playoff run they had, those five World Series titles, if you needed a big hit, you knew Derek Jeter was going to come through. And even in defeat, he always said, you know, we'll get it next year. We're going to come back. We have a great squad. We have a great ownership. We're going to get back and do it the Yankee way. Now, you can love the Yankees. You can hate the Yankees for the way they operate and the money they spend. But if you have Derek Jeter on your team as your leader, that's a start. And every team is looking for that type of guy on their team, that type of guy that can just change the attitude. When he came into the Yankees in 1995, a lot of people don't remember the Yankees weren't a staple team at that point. They were starting to get better, yes, but you definitely look to when he joined the Yankees as to when the whole entire tide turned. They already had Bernie Williams, Tino Martinez, Paul O'Neill, but it was that guy that was able to unite everyone at the top of the order. And it's a lot to be said, because every single lineup, in my opinion, Major League Baseball needs an excellent one or two hitter. You have to start with the top of the order, and then the boppers in the middle, they can operate. When you have people on base, it makes their job that much easier. We have a guy like Derek Jeter who can bang out a double, who could steal a base, and bats 300 every year. It is just an absolute weapon to have at the top.
You know, Andy, we heard a lot this past week about Derek Jeter, what was observable, that it didn't matter if it was the World Series or his first game of the season, he was consistent, as you're alluding to. He always would be prepared. He would always give his best effort, no matter what.
And that's what really sticks out in his career. You know, the 20 years that he's going to play, he batted over 300 almost every year. And when he didn't, it was usually just a tick under in the 290s. So he compiles a 316 lifetime batting average, over 3,000 hits. Not to mix in that he was a pretty good defender during his young days. And that kind of escaped him later on. But you know, people say he can't get to a lot of balls, but he also doesn't make a lot of errors. So he was a very useful player, not just with the bat, but every little bit that he did, whether it was the clubhouse, whether it was defensively, whether it was stealing a base and he needed a very heady player out on the field. And like I said, a four-tool player, probably didn't have the power to call him a power hitter, but just as good of a complete player as you're going to find for an entire 20-year span.
Andy Pondillo, our producer at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, hanging out with us on Valentine's evening. And I wanted to ask you, Andy, what are your thoughts about Derek Jeter making this announcement before the start of spring training?
I think that's just a Derek Jeter way. Everything he does is kind of Hollywood, but in New York. So everything's on that big stage for him. And to put it on Facebook, to let the world know by himself, not through an agent, not through some really scripted press conference, I think that was really the Derek Jeter way. And he said that he wanted to be 100% sure. He talked about it with his family during the offseason, talked about it with his friends, and they told him to think about it, to be 100% sure before he said anything, because once you say something, you can't go back on it. Or you can, but it just kind of looks a little goofy, kind of like Roger Clemens, who retired and then came right back, retired and came back. So, you know, Derek Jeter, he wanted to be 100%, and I truly believe that this will be his last year.
Okay, so hypothetically, what if, you know, he turns 40, as we just mentioned, in the month of June, but what if he has this incredible year? I mean, do you think there's going to be some regret on his part? Like, man, I still have it in the tank. I mean, I should keep going.
I think you see that with certain players in sports, like maybe a Tony Gonzalez, who hadn't ever won a Super Bowl. But considering that Derek Jeter has the five World Series championships, I don't think that he's going to feel he's leaving a whole lot behind at this point.
What do you think he will miss the most, Andy, about his time away now from, it's been such a huge part of his life?
I think he's just going to miss the competition. He's a competitor. He loves that one-on-one competition with the pitcher. He loves to get up there, try to outsmart the pitcher, get on base, make things happen on the base pass. And I think he's just a pure competitor of baseball. And those top-of-the-order guys, I always think they're the grittiest, the greatest competitors, the middle infielders. They're the guys that seem like they always have their nose in a lot of stuff in baseball. So I think he's just going to miss that competition.
I'll tell you what, no matter what kind of competitor you are, what sport you're in, you're going to miss, you know, he's going to miss the guys in the clubhouse, too. Just that camaraderie and hanging out with the guys. I mean,
or maybe he wants to get out of the clubhouse with Alex Rodriguez and all those shenanigans going on. You know, the Yankees, they're still good. They're still going to compete, but they're not the Yankees of old. And I don't know if he still has that team like he used to. I think everyone respects him. He's still the captain, but I don't know if it's the same team that he grew up with the Yankees with. So I think it's a good time. It's kind of a changing of the guard over there. Brian McCann, Carlos Beltran coming in. So I think that this is a good swan song of a year for him.
Hey, we are going around the horn with Andy Pondillo, our producer at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Elissa Walker-Campbell. We want you to join us online at Twitter, at eRadioSports and eRadioSports.com. And we want to pause here. Andy, tell all of our listeners across the country tonight where they can check out your podcast and also follow you on Twitter.
Well, unfortunately, I'm a Houston fan, so you can follow my podcast on ClimbingTallisHill.com. We talk a lot of Astros baseball, kind of gossip on what's going to happen in the future as they try to rebuild their organization. It's called Blasting Off again, ClimbingTallisHill.com, and the Twitter handle at AndyYSR. Andy spelled normal, YSR following it.
Okay, so just one more quick question, one more hit on Derek Jeter. From a historical perspective, where do you think he ranks? I mean, as far as, you know, one of the greatest shortstops of all time.
He ranks in the top three shortstops of all time, I think, offensively. Defensively, no. He won the 5 gold gloves. I think early in his career, he's a good defender, but he was never an excellent defender at shortstop. He did enough to say he was a good defender, but I don't know if you can put him in that upper echelon. I think his offense is what separates him. And doing it at a middle infield position, that's something you don't see very often. You'll see second baseman and shortstop have big years and then level off immediately. What makes Derek Jeter so special is how consistent he was. It's extremely hard in this era of baseball to bat 300 year in and year out, especially with the way the strikeouts are up. So for him to continue to hit 300, that's what really separates him to me.
Well, it's going to be tough to see one of the greatest Yankees say goodbye. He has meant so much to this team, to this organization, and won 5 world championships since making his debut in 1995. So, Andy Pondillo, let's take time to transition and provide for the listeners tonight a little bit of a preview on the 2014, the upcoming season. It was very eventful. And let's head out to the AL West and let's talk about the Texas Rangers. A massive change a year ago, but what are your expectations coming into this season?
It's going to be tough for the Rangers. I think they're a very strong team coming in. I think they can win the division. There's nothing saying they can't. I do look at their pitching to be a little bit thin. They have Yu Darvish, who obviously has been a sensation since coming over to Texas. Derek Holland going to miss half the season after injuring himself playing with his dog. He had a knee injury, so that's going to really hurt the Rangers. And then they have their prospect Martin Perez, who is expected to do great things. So the rotation, while they have 3 pitchers there that could be good, it looks a little thin to me. And then offensively, they could have the best offense in the American League. The Achilles heel for the Rangers in the last few years has been their health. They've had a lot of trouble keeping their pitching healthy. And they've had kind of a changing of the guard, as you said. Now with Prince Fielder coming in, Ian Kinsler out, I expect them to win 88 games. I don't know if they're going to get to 90 wins. I just don't like their starting pitching. I think Derek Holland's too much of a blow. But the AL West is not the best division in baseball. And right now, I think it's wide open for a lot of these teams, probably besides the Astros, to be able to take it.
Okay, just a few more minutes this weekend at YSR, the Big E Sports Show, with our producer, Andy Pondillo. So let's talk about, you were just mentioning your podcast. Let's talk about the Astros, because they have struggled mightily over the past couple of years. I know they're rolling up their sleeves, and the rebuilding process just continues, doesn't it?
It continues, but it's starting to get to where it needs to be, because what happened was the Astros changed ownership a few years ago, and when you do that in baseball, baseball is more of a planning sport. You can't just go out there and win. It's not football where there's parity, where any team can win a Super Bowl every year. Baseball, it takes a little time to build an organization that can win a World Series. So when they changed ownerships, they changed the plan entirely, gutted the entire team, gutted the farm system, and started from scratch. It's kind of a hybrid thing that really, I don't know if any organization has ever gutted it quite like the Astros did. And now they have the number one farm system in baseball. So they're starting to get to that point where they have their top prospects starting to get to the major leagues. Mark Appel, Carlos Correa, 2 guys that you're going to have to look out for in the coming years, but they're not quite there yet. And that means the Astros aren't quite there yet. I think they get out of the basement. I don't think they're the worst team in baseball this year, because they have a good collection of young pitching. Brett Oberholzer, Jared Cozart, then they acquired Scott Feldman, a veteran, but should help the staff as he can eat up some innings. So you have a couple good young pitchers, and then a couple of good young players that are on the way. George Springer, Jonathan Singleton. So a lot of these names, you probably don't know who they are right now, but you will very soon. And what it is when you have a group of prospects like this, not all of them are going to turn out, but if you get two or three of them that hit big, it can change a whole organization just in 24 hours, it seems like.
Well, the Houston Astros, as I understand, they were very aggressive in the offseason than in years past, and they're looking to move forward. We will definitely have you back once again, and as we continue to break through and break down the AL West, it's always a pleasure to have you and work with you each and every week. Thank you, Andy.
I appreciate it. I enjoyed it.
And we also want to take time to thank all of our guests and our lineup tonight. Of course, we were just visiting with our producer, Andy Pondillo from Yahoo Sports Radio, doing a great job previewing the 2014 Major League Baseball season. Jason Peter with our weekly Under the Helmet segment. Also, a very special thank you to Fred Clare, the former Executive Vice President and General Manager for the Dodgers, James Hale, the Senior Writer with OU Insider, and Janice Burke, the CEO of the Houston Sports Authority. Remember, don't drink and drive. Join us each and every weekend at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, and enjoy your Valentine's Day. We will see you next week.
Organized and save big money with Dakota Closets at Menards. Dakota Closets can be installed in any room, from home offices and laundry rooms to walk-in or reach-in closets. Use the You Create Closet Planner, available in-store or online, to design a Dakota closet system that maximizes your space and matches your style. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
Save big.